Hello, it's Tuesday, September 5th, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio. You know what we need here more than anything in the world is about 3 or 4 more hours in every day because we just can't keep up right now.
We just have to move faster.
Yeah, I think we move about as fast as we can right now. But as soon as we're done with this show, we're going to do an interview with Darren Weeks, and we have to get all our books shipped out that have come in. Since yesterday was Labor Day, we couldn't ship everything out, so it's just another jam-packed day, but it's good to be back at Wing TV. We're glad all of you are tuning in. Thanks for all the emails from everybody welcoming us back. And what we're going to do today, since we were away for a few days last week, is just catch everybody up on some of the things going on in the world, not only in this country, but also abroad, some of the news stories. So, Lisa, why don't you start off?
Well, we haven't talked about Iraq and Afghanistan for a while, so I thought I'd check out what's going on over there. The Pentagon has released its quarterly report on the Iraq war. It's 63 pages long. Some of you may have already seen Paul Craig Roberts' article about this. But it says the core conflict in Iraq has turned from a battle against insurgents to an increasingly bloody fight between the Shiites and the Sunnis. The overall attacks have risen 24% to 792 per week, and daily Iraqi casualties have now soared 51% to about 120 a day. The violence between the minority Sunnis and the majority Shiites is escalating, and now defines the conflict, according to the Pentagon. Death squads are also, according to this report, heavily responsible for the sectarian violence that's spreading north of Baghdad. Some of the everyday Iraqi citizens are looking to militias now for safety and protection, social needs and welfare, and the Sunni Arab insurgency remains potent and viable, according to the Pentagon. In other words, they've accomplished about as much there as they're accomplishing anywhere else. Conditions currently existing in Iraq, according to the Pentagon, may tip and slide into civil war. And what's really ironic is
I guess they have a different definition of civil war.
A strategic, yeah. Well, no, they don't have a definition. That's the problem. One of the rear admirals that strategically plans for the Joint Chiefs of Staff was asked if Iraq is already in a low-grade civil war. And what did he say here? He said, "It's hard to say. There is no universally accepted definition of civil war." Maybe they should ask Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Well, that's funny that there's no definition. It's like all the other words that they use out of Orwell that they either change the definition of or...
Yeah. The U.S. has boosted its Iraq force to 140,000, highest since January. They have 15,000 troops trying to prevent Baghdad from getting into this all-out civil war. So that's a mess. Then we've got Afghanistan, Victor.
Well, let me touch upon this story. It came out a couple of days ago. Afghani opium production hit, yet again, another record high this year. By best estimates now, they said that about 6,100 tons of opium will be shipped out of Afghanistan this year. This is a 50% rise from year to year from when the United States first went into Afghanistan. And before we get to some of the other numbers, right after 9/11... which country did we invade first? Now, if you ask a lot of people on the streets, they would say Iraq. But, of course, they're wrong.
Right.
We went into Afghanistan first. And conveniently enough, that's where Osama bin Laden and his terrorists were supposedly training in the caves of Afghanistan. Well, the most ironic aspect of this is that the Taliban in 1999 going into 2000 went in and eradicated most of the opium production in Afghanistan and replaced it with crops. Now, everybody knows that the CIA makes a huge amount of money for their black budget project from the drug trade, especially heroin. So when this huge amount of income was wiped away, with the Taliban moving into Afghanistan and replacing the opium with food, the CIA was losing a ton of money. So what they do is go in, put the blame of 9/11 on Osama bin Laden, Afghanistan, invade it. Instantly, the food crops are ripped out, replaced with opium, and right now, 92% of the world's opium production, 92%.
Maybe the CIA is the Taliban.
Yeah. It comes from this country. And if you imagine how little heroin is needed for each junkie. I mean, I've never shot heroin or anything like that, but if you see it on TV and you see the little spoon, they just put a little bit of heroin in, melt it down, and shoot it up. Imagine 6,100 tons, and a ton is 2,000 pounds. Mm. So, I mean, if you do the math on that, there's a staggering amount of heroin coming out of Afghanistan.
Relating to that, there's a new report out. It's called Afghanistan, 5 years later, the return of the Taliban. It should be return of the CIA. Tells the tale of what's going on there in Afghanistan. It's said to be falling back into the hands of the Taliban, according to this report, and British troops there are having a time of it, fighting in what this report calls a lawless land. The report says the British U.S. international-led coalition has failed to achieve stability and security. So much for progress in that part of the world, huh?
And if anybody does any kind of research pre-9/11, and they look at what was going on in Afghanistan with these drug lords and how cozy they were with our CIA, it's really, Lisa, nothing more than a throwback now to the pre-9/11, pre-Taliban Afghanistan.
Right.
I mean, this is nothing but a huge drug lord country, and there's been quite a number of good books. Peter Dale Scott wrote one, and it's business as usual now, the drug business with the CIA and their foreign drug lords. It was just like during Vietnam when you had the Golden Triangle with Burma and Laos and Thailand running all the heroin out. All they did was just shift everything north up to Afghanistan, and it's nothing but a bloody, drug-infested mess up there right now.
Well, Israel continues to violate the ceasefire, according to Al Hayat newspaper, which is London-based, and the Jerusalem Post. Hezbollah has told German intelligence chief Ernst Erlau that there won't be any negotiations over the release of the captured IDF soldiers being held by Hezbollah. As long as Israel continues to violate the ceasefire, Israel, of course, apparently has, you know, is going to continue attacking regardless. Hezbollah leaders allege that IAF has been carrying out sorties over Lebanon and the IDF has not fully withdrawn from the south. Israel Radio is reporting that Hezbollah has demanded Israel lift its air and sea blockade on Lebanon. According to Al Hayat newspaper in London, European mediators have not received any information on the welfare of the Israeli soldiers that Hezbollah is holding. And likewise, I'm sure the Hezbollah leaders have not received any information, or the Palestinian leaders have not received any information on the thousands and thousands and thousands of people being held against their will by Israel.
Speaking of which, yesterday, former Israeli President Benjamin Netanyahu left Israel to go to Washington, D.C. And who is he going to meet in D.C.? Vice President Dick Cheney. So you have right now Ballistic Bibi, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Evil Dick, two of the most sadistic, bloodthirsty, warmongering psychopaths in the world to meet in Washington, D.C. Now, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert briefed Benjamin Netanyahu before he left. Now, who knows what that means? But I saw Dick Cheney speak once live before the 2000 election. We've spoken about it on this show before, and there's never been a time in my life when I've felt more evil vibes coming off of an individual than from Dick Cheney. And whenever we see Benjamin Netanyahu on TV, it's like looking at evil incarnate. So you're going to have two of, quite possibly, the most evil men in the world meeting this week in Washington, D.C., Dick Cheney and Benjamin Netanyahu, and it's the vibes that would come out of that room, I can't even imagine.
Right.
It's just like Satan himself would be there.
In its ever-present blatant disregard for what the rest of the world has to say, Israel plans to build new homes on the West Bank. It's planning to build 690 new homes in two Jewish settlements in the occupied West Bank, despite the fact that Israel's not supposed to construct anything else on Palestinian land. In fact, the World Court has branded all Jewish settlements on the occupied land as illegal. Israel could, of course, care less.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting story. We got two more stories on Israel, then we're going to move on. But there's a new book coming out called The Architect, Karl Rove, and The Master Plan for Absolute Power. It's written by two journalists down in Austin, Texas, named James Moore and Wayne Slater. And there's a little, there's a headline from an article from Raw Story, and it's supposedly what George Bush, who is then governor of Texas, said to a reporter from the Austin American Statesman. He says, "You know what I'm going to tell those Jews when I get to Israel, don't you, Herman?" I guess the journalist's name was Herman. He says, "I'm going to tell them they're all going to hell." And that's what the headline, Bush told reporter, "Jews are all going to hell." And I guess the reason why is because they don't accept Jesus Christ.
Does he think that way when he's wearing the yarmulke?
Yeah. Now, it would be interesting to run this headline past George Bush now, because it seems like since he moved into the White House, since he's been sucked up and engulfed by all these neocons.
He's had a little change of heart.
A little change of heart. Now,
a little change of hat.
Exactly. Yeah, he changed his cowboy hat for his yarmulke, so quite interesting. Now, here's a story that Lisa passed my way yesterday, and it's on the Wing TV homepage, wingtv.net. Israel's poor hit 1.6 million.
We're not giving them enough money, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I wrote as the headline of this article on the homepage is, where is all the United States welfare money going to Israel? We're giving them $10 billion plus a year, yet, according to this article, 1,631,000 Israelis live in poverty, and this makes up over a quarter of all the families in Israel.
But wait a minute. How do they define poverty? Does it mean they can't afford their second home or their summer vacations? Or how are they defining poverty?
No, I think this is legitimate poverty. Well, that's the big question. $10 billion to a country that's not much bigger than those countries up in our New England states.
Uh-huh.
We're laying $10 billion a year in their lap, and a quarter of their population, according to this article in Ynet, a quarter of their population is living in poverty. It's amazing. Amazing, because we know where the money's going. It's going not only to pad the pockets of those officials at the top of the bureaucracy, but also to fuel Israel's war machine.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's
just... And, of course, nobody's tracking where the money went.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely not.
Of course not.
Absolutely. And to read something like this, it's like a big money pit. Just a big funnel. You know, like Ross Perot used to say, that big sucking sound.
Right.
And this money is, it's incredible what this country is doing and how we continue on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis to keep feeding this beast with more and more money. It's incredible.
I guess the crocodile hunter got killed, I guess by a stingray, huh?
Mm-hmm,
He finally met his match.
Yes, he did. Now, here's a story that's very interesting and more timely, because when we were at the American Free Press Conference over the weekend, we spoke with William Rodriguez, and also there was a gentleman who was on our 9/11 panel that spoke about the health concerns for all those search and rescue workers that were at the World Trade Center Tower, Ground Zero. And also, who do we have on our show? Matthew Tartaglia.
Right, Sergeant
a couple
Matthew
of
Tartaglia
times.
From now, U.S. Search and Rescue.
Yeah. Now, this is an article from Lycos News, and it said that nearly 70% of the recovery workers, Lisa, 70% who responded to the attacks at the World Trade Center Towers have reported now that they're suffering from lung problems in the less than 5 years that have transpired.
And God only knows what the numbers are of just the citizens of New York that live in that area that went back to their apartments and went back to work and live in the area. Is anybody tracking those numbers?
I mean, what we have here is just a toxic swamp. After 9/11, it was just this rubble. And not only do 70% of the search and rescue, the rescue workers that respond, said they have lung problems, but 61% said that they have severe lung problems right now. One-third abnormal lung functions in the tests. And it just goes on and on and on.
Plus,
that,
15 of the rescue dogs that work to try to find and recover victims from the World Trade Center collapses are dead.
Yeah.
because of health issues after 9/11.
Yeah, and even that, what was his name again, Smith, Jeff Smith?
Jeff Smith.
Yeah, he said that remember when he was giving his speech, Lisa, he said he's on like 15 different medications now or
yeah.
something
yeah.
like this, and this has all developed since 9/11. So, I mean, not only was it one of the greatest crimes ever committed against this country, if not the greatest, but it's still lingering now 5 years after the fact. And
maybe we should divert the money that's getting sent to the money pit in Israel to New York City to help all the people that are dying from the government's lies.
Right. And to show how much they don't want to deal with this situation, of course the government isn't recognizing. This is kind of like Agent Orange is kind of like Legionnaire's disease, but now this is on an entirely different scale. And how many was it? 20-some people, I believe, 20 or 30 have already died from ailments or from ramifications from 9/11, from being at ground zero that can be directly tied to this.
Correct.
And it just seems like over the next 5 or 10 or 15 years, this is going to become a massive health problem in the New York City area.
Maybe their non-responsiveness is just showing everybody that they really do want more fatalities from the events of 9/11 than what they received. Did you see this, too? The U.S. is toughening rules regarding passports. The Wall Street Journal was reporting it. The Department of Homeland Security and Congress have decided to make it more restrictive and more of a hassle if you want to travel from the Caribbean to the United States. They're going to require a passport now.
Oh, yeah?
So, like, that's really going to be more restrictive. Try getting out of the country and see how much of a hassle that is at the airports.
Yeah. Well, it seems like Mike Rupert didn't have much trouble getting out of the country.
Well, you know, if you can just get his buddy Levine to help you get to Mexico... You're in a cakewalk there.
Yeah.
You can go anywhere.
Yeah. Now, yesterday, news out of Berlin, Germany's foreign minister says that Iran now has been given its last chance. On and on and on and on. And what's very interesting, and I was talking to a guy at the AFP conference, and he was going to send me an article. He hasn't done it yet. But it's an article about Iran's military.
Mm-hmm.
And the conventional wisdom is that Iran has this very big, powerful military, okay?
Uh-huh.
What he was saying is that's not the case. Now, I don't know if it's true or not.
What did he say then?
But he says that, you know, their airplanes, they don't even have the parts for them, that they're outdated, they have an outdated air force. And if anybody has information on this, either way, that either Iran's military is very highly developed or the opposite of that.
Well, let me ask you this. What was his source of information on that?
It was this article that he was sourcing, the quoting, and he said he was going to send me a link to it, and I said, I'm very, very interested in this. So as soon as we get that in, we're going to report to you on it.
The truth. Considering how well, really, I mean, considering all the bloodshed and the violence, Iraq and Afghanistan, the people there have, and even in Palestine,
mm-hmm.
the people there haven't had all kinds of high-tech means to defend themselves, and I think they've been doing a damn good job holding out as long as they have.
Well,
so perhaps Iran doesn't need all this, you know, serious high-tech stuff to give the United States a run for its money.
Well, or even more so, Israel. Because there are major battles right now in the Israeli military, a lot of blame games, a lot of finger-pointing as to why they just didn't roll in to Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And roll over them and not bat an eye. I mean, what happened was they couldn't take the country over. Right now they're in this quasi-ceasefire, which, of course, Israel keeps breaking.
There's no ceasefire.
But they haven't been able to roll over Lebanon and then aim their sabers at Syria and Iran. And it's kind of like the same scenario with the United States, that we went into Afghanistan, rolled over them, took over the opium production, went into Iraq, and we thought, well, we'll roll over them and set, you know, just like dominoes falling.
Mm-hmm.
And neither Israel or the United States has been able to get this domino scenario going. And right now, everything's in limbo with Israel. I mean, absolutely, they're still targeting Iran and Syria, but they're not moving ahead as quickly as I think they wanted their game plan to. And I was talking to someone at that conference and said, you remember, oh, geez, Lise, how long has it been? 6 months, a year, when we talked about the window of opportunity for each presidency.
Right.
And that there's only a certain amount of time in each presidency when spike events or these other things can happen. And I said, right now, if we're going into the 2008 election, I'd say we have maybe 12 to 16 months left for a spike event or to really roll things over. Because if you get too close to the upcoming election, the powers that be have already said, all right, we're going to just wait and turn everything over to the next administration then. So, you know, I think they wanted to be much, much more ahead of the game than they are right now in the Middle East.
Did you see that Israel's pretty much handing Kofi Annan his hat? They don't want the UN mediating. They want only assistance from the UN. They said Kofi Annan is not going to be a mediator with what's going on. And it's funny how Israel will utilize the United Nations for its own purposes, dictating the terms. And when it's convenient, the UN serves Israel a purpose. And then when it's not convenient for Israel, the UN can go fly a kite.
Right. Right.
So it's just standard fare.
Yeah. Now, before we move on, I want to mention two articles that we're going to discuss tomorrow on the show. One is about the true casualties in our United States-Iraqi war.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to someone, again, at the... That's what's so good about these conferences is you get to meet all these different people and talk about these different issues.
Right.
Well, he knows... This guy knew somebody... Quite a number of people in the military that was saying that the number right now isn't something like 2,600 dead are servicemen in Iraq. Well, this number is up over 12,000 dead.
Well, yeah, because we know that the Pentagon is not reporting a lot of the deaths that occur.
So that's one of the articles, or one of the news items we want to talk about tomorrow. The other one is about illegal immigration. And this new book out by Pat Buchanan that's really breaking the numbers down and showing what a catastrophe this is, especially in the southern and the border states. So those are two things we're going to talk about tomorrow. We're going to, you know, I kind of wanted to today, but with so many other news stories going on, I think we're going to focus primarily on those two items tomorrow. But here's an article about Hillary Clinton. And she's playing it real coy right now about whether she's running, whether she's not. And, of course, it's a foregone conclusion. Everybody knows that she's running. But, you know, there's questions from ABC's Nightline, questions during her press conferences, questions during her speeches.
I'm still waiting for an act of God.
Yeah, to make it not happen.
Right.
But right now she's still playing it coy, and... When we spoke about her last week, Lisa, didn't the article in Time Magazine say that by spring of next year, at the very latest...
She's got to announce what she's going to do.
And we suspect, as soon as the midterm elections are over this fall, when the GOP won't even put up a candidate to fight against her, I'm thinking early next year, maybe January of next year, she's going to throw her hat in the ring. And once that happens... It's full steam ahead.
That's all she wrote, folks.
Yeah, for the evil
Clinton
dynasty. And it's Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton.
If you think things are bad now, just wait.
Right, right. Now, before we close out today, like I said, as soon as we're done here, we're doing an interview with Darren Weeks. We've never been on his show before.
No.
But I guess he's going to record this today and play it next Monday on the 5th anniversary of 9/11. And also we want to say a big thank you to Tex Mars. I recorded an interview last week with him, and I guess he broadcasted over the weekend, getting a lot of good feedback from the people down there, not only in Austin, Texas, where Tex is located, but also from people on the shortwave and so forth.
Yeah, we hope that the Tex is healing up quickly from his spider bite.
Right.
I haven't had any info on how he's doing.
No, we're going to have to give him a buzz here and see how he's doing. But, Lisa, do you have anything else on there?
No.
Because we're going to cut this show a little bit short today because, like I said, we have to jump into this interview. So we're going to be back tomorrow. We're going to talk about the true casualties in Iraq, plus the ramifications of open borders.
And we're going to tell you a little story about our little trip to Wendy's the other day in D.C.
Oh, you know what? I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a perfect segue into tomorrow's show. And this was a
first. We never eat that kind of food either, but the restaurant in the hotel at the AFP conference was closed for a portion of the day. And so everybody had to go outside the hotel to get some kind of lunch. And we decided to go to Wendy's. Big, big mistake.
Yeah. So we'll tell you that story. That's how we'll open the show tomorrow. That's a good way. And it was
horrifying.
Yeah. It was a look into the future that's really the present day.
It was a walking into the third world.
Yeah. So we'll leave it at that. Anyway, folks, we'll be back tomorrow. We need more hours in every day here at Wing TV, so we're glad you're tuning in. Drop us a line. We're finally trying to get caught up on all our emails. It's it was like a mountain of things. But we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, keep your eyes open, because there's a lot going on.
See you all then.